This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2020, Episode 1. Hell with it. We're going old school today, Rob. We're going right into it. We're playing the music.
I love it.
This is like the days of old, man.
Sitting in Trav's basement, bringing out the GIMP.
Yeah, but I confused you tonight because my wife changed around the in-home studio, and you walked in and you were like, where the hell am I?
I like continuity. I don't like, you move the furniture around, it screws me up.
Well, here's what happened. My son was home for the holiday break. He was home for a complete month. He went back to the University of Kansas yesterday. We're recording this on Monday.
Oh, so
the 20th.
He just went back. Okay. See, my daughter went back, 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, today's Martin Luther King Day, and he didn't even have classes today. He didn't have classes till tomorrow.
Man, that's getting off, like, easy.
Well, I will give him this, because he worked his entire time that he was back. He works for MCO Construction.
Yeah.
Doing labor work. That's where I have to
work. Because I was over here a few times over that time period.
Yeah.
He was coming in and they're bedraggled at the end of the day.
But see, he is a slob. So my wife did a major cleaning of this room today, which probably hasn't been done in a long, long time. We learned today that my son hid a big old fifth of vodka. We found that. We learned that he smokes Juuls, or the vapors. So hopefully he stops doing that.
That stuff's not good for you.
No, and so
I've been preaching that one for almost 10 years now.
He had a bunch of Mike's Hard Lemonade bottles underneath the couch. I'm like, you know, all you had to do is throw them away. We don't care that you drank. You don't have to hide it from us. So this was just an absolute pit. So I think next we're going to try to paint in here. We're going to make it, we're going to paint white walls, ooh, get rid of the red walls.
It'll lighten it up a bit.
And maybe some new carpet and stuff, yeah.
There you go.
So your daughter went back to Florida State 2 weeks ago already?
Yeah, went back on January 4th.
Wow. That's early.
Yeah, well, I think they were out second week in December.
Okay.
So they had she had most of December. I mean, if you want to split hairs, most of December she was back in town.
So you and I had lunch with Dave Remington and Tony Felici and the whole bunch down at Shucks in downtown Omaha today, which is fun.
I can speak fluent South O now.
Yeah, see, it's amazing how that works out. And the deal was, I wanted to have Dave on the podcast because this would be, I think, the first year since he has sponsored the podcast, which I don't even know how long it's been, 5 or 6 years now, that he did not come on the podcast.
And yeah, I think it is the first time that he hasn't done it at all.
Yeah, and so he was going to come over to the house tonight, and he's like, you know, I really don't want to do it. I'm like, is it me? And he's like, no, because, you know, I don't have a car. I don't know what you're going to ask me. I don't really have anything to say. And he goes, how about this? If I sign up for next year already, I'll sign on the dotted line to be your sponsor again. I don't have to do the podcast. I said, well, Dave, I just kind of assumed you were going to do the podcast next year. He goes, oh, you never know. You never know when I can pull the plug. So he was dangling that carrot. And I'm like, oh, all right, Dave, I won't twist your arm. You're one of the greatest players ever to play the game. I'm just happy that you like the podcast. He's still uncomfortable with us swearing. He did.
That was the thing that kind of surprised me, because I actually always took that a little bit tongue in cheek. I knew he didn't like it, because I think what he always said is he would listen to it with his kids driving in the car.
Yeah,
and he didn't want like the random F-bomb coming out. And I get that. But yeah, he was actually kind of serious about that.
Now, because he suggested maybe we start YouTubing the podcast, and I don't know how interesting that would be to have us on YouTube.
Man, some people like that.
And I don't understand that. I guess I don't. Would you watch a bit? Because I can go buy it's called a Mevo camera, where we could have a camera operator. Yeah. We could hook that stuff. It would sound great and everything. But I just kind of like people driving in their car, listening to the podcast, or if they're on the treadmill or the elliptical or the exercise bike, just turning us on and listening to us that way.
Yeah, I there's a handful of podcasts out there that I actually do watch on YouTube.
Well, Joe Rogan's on YouTube.
Yeah. From a business aspect, Dave made the point, and he's right. From an advertising dollar standpoint, that's how you actually make money. I mean, unless you've got a really hardcore podcast. Yeah. I mean, we've mentioned, say, for instance, like Malcolm Gladwell. Like Malcolm Gladwell's making money off of his podcast. It doesn't have to be on YouTube. Yeah. There's a lot of people who do it on YouTube because that's the if they didn't do it on YouTube, they wouldn't make enough money to be able to do it.
Well, yeah, I mean this, and people get mad at us this past season because we changed our advertising structure. We didn't really change the structure. We've always had sponsors. It's just where we place them.
I still don't get that.
Either do I. And people are like, you guys are just sold out for the money now. I promise you, Dr. Rob and I are not getting rich doing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. I promise you that. You don't have to worry. But we're lucky enough that we do have people that believe in this.
Yeah, I take pride in the fact that we've got people that sponsor us.
So I will ask this, and you can send us an email, or you can send it to Dr. Rob on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports, and that is, if we move this to YouTube, now you could still find it on iTunes because we could still upload and stuff, but if I moved it to YouTube, would you watch it and listen to it? So what we could do, Rob, we could, like, we usually record on a Sunday night or a Monday night during the season. I mean, we could YouTube live it and then upload it to iTunes or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and there's, I mean, you think about it in terms of people watching it, there's a number of people who are really hardcore into, say, like the Facebook Live video broadcasts that some people do.
Well, we could do that. I guess I could create a Doc Talk Sports Facebook page.
Yeah. Well, I guess my point was is just there is an audience out there for people who want to watch it.
The nice thing if we did do live, whether it was on YouTube or even Facebook Live, is we could take questions as we're doing it. You know, I mean, people could tune in, listen to it, and then we could take questions. Man, you drank that beer quick.
It's Infusion.
He's drinking the Infusion Pistachio Porter.
That one went down oddly smooth.
And I'm not drinking because I'm doing an intermittent fast right now. I've almost two complete weeks. I don't eat breakfast. I can only eat from noon until 8. You're looking at me like I'm a dumb shit.
Yeah, whatever, dude. Actually, there's some okay science behind that.
Is it really?
Yeah, I'd push it early. If I was you, though, I'd push it earlier in the day.
What do you mean, eat earlier?
Yeah, I'd take that. So you're taking, what, like an 8-hour block of time there?
Yeah.
I'd back that whole thing up 4 hours.
So only take a 4-hour block of time?
No, I would move that 8-hour block 4 hours earlier in the day. Go from 8 a.m. till 4 p.m.
Okay.
Maybe
I'll do that next week because I can do that 8-hour block kind of wherever I want. So maybe I'll do that.
I would do that 8-hour block earlier. The earlier in the day, the better.
Okay. All right.
And there's just kind of some circadian rhythms and hormonal fluctuations throughout the course of the day that I think it's more beneficial to do it earlier in the day.
So Dr. Rob's drinking the pistachio porter from Infusion Brewing Company. I want you guys to write this date down. It is March 8th at the Infusion Brewing Company in Benson. They're going to have a chili cook-off. And as of right now,
it was awesome last year.
It was awesome last year. We got to eat some really good chili, and of course, we got to drink some really cool beer. But Dr. Rob and I are going to be back at Infusion on March 8th to judge the chili cook-off. It goes from noon until 3. I believe that's a Sunday, isn't it? Isn't the 8th a Sunday?
I believe it is. Yeah, because I thought this. I'm thinking.
And so you can stop by, you can eat chili with us, you can drink beer with us, and just have fun with us because we like going to Infusion. We like eating chili and we like drinking beer. And it is a Sunday. Now, before we dive into some football, because believe it or not, boy, some stuff happened over the last couple of weeks that we need to talk about. You were at the Remington Trophy celebration Saturday night in Lincoln. I was not able to go this year. I had a previous engagement that I had to attend.
Hate Dave.
No, I don't hate Dave.
The Huskers.
I was supporting one of my employees who accomplished a very cool thing. So I thought I would be a halfway decent boss and show up and be supportive. But it was weird for Dave, and I think he was a little stressed out. I didn't know this. Because of the bad weather, like nobody showed up. His Remington Trophy winner was having shoulder surgery.
Which, when you say that, there was a nice crowd there. So,
yes.
I mean, tables were filled, seats were filled. Yeah, you did have a lot of former Huskers there. I mean, kind of the normal cadre of former Huskers, good good bunch of former NFL guys. But yeah, the entire Wisconsin contingent.
I mean, because Paul Chris was supposed to show up. Barry Alvarez is supposed to show
Joe
up.
Joe Rudolph, the O-line, former NFL player and O-lineman.
The Remington Trophy winner. They knew he was not going to show up because he had shoulder surgery. So Dave told me they found out about a week and a half ago that he wasn't going to make it. And then Barry Alvarez is like, don't worry, Dave. We'll make it up to you. I'm going to come. Paul Chris is going to come. Well, then almost every flight, including private flights, got grounded, so nobody could get out of Madison, Wisconsin in order to get to Lincoln. And then Dominic Raiola, the Ford Legends Award winner, was supposed to be there. He didn't show up because he had some family issues that popped up late. So Dave was left scrambling like a day and a half, a day before the trophy celebration, going, what do they do? Well, they had Eric Crouch there, they had Mike Rozier there, and they had Johnny Rogers there. So I heard that little Q&A with those guys turned into be pretty funny.
It actually was funny. I mean, they kind of went off on a few tangents. I wanted to hear more. Give me some behind the scenes Heisman Trophy stories. Like what happens at the Heisman Trophy ceremony that we don't get to see? Or I want to know what's Marcus Allen like behind the scenes. I mean, it's just, that's the kind of crap I think people want to hear. And I could have, I wanted to have those guys sit up on stage a little longer and start getting into that kind of stuff.
Well, and Dave, and he doesn't mean this as any disrespect, but he doesn't, in the past, he's never wanted that to be a Husker gathering. Like the
and I get that.
The Allen Trophy is a Husker gathering. You know, there's a lot of former Huskers there, but he wants to make sure whoever wins that award is not overshadowed by what that hometown crowd is. And I think that's giving so much respect to the winner, right?
I think it is. They do a nice job on the cystic fibrosis front. Yep. Raised a bunch of money that night. And then I'm absolutely blanking on her name, but they always have a story.
Yeah,
cystic fibrosis. Survivor's the best way to put it. And the gal they had do it, so it was a gal who'd been diagnosed with cystic fibrosis when she was, I mean, very, very young, few months old. And she came up, gave her testimonial. And so she ended up making it into college, joined a sorority, was doing great, and then had a big setback, but then managed to get a double lung transplant. So after the transplant, she did quite well for a while, and then she came down with, you go on the anti-rejection drugs, and that can trigger it's not the drugs themselves, but I mean, having, for lack of a better phraseology, somebody else's organs in you can trigger
Margaret Corfoya.
Okay, yep. It can trigger basically a form of lymphoma, but it's called post-transplant lymphoproliferative disorder. And basically it's where you've got a little bit of an immune system from the transplanted organs going to battle with your own immune system. And that triggers that post-transplant lymphoproliferative disorder. So she developed that, had to get that treated. Once they got that treated, came down with breast cancer. I mean, it's literally, this person is literally a cystic fibrosis and double cancer survivor. And if you look at her, just, oh my gosh. I mean, just this incredibly bright, full of life person. But I mean, you're sitting there thinking about all the things this person has had to go through in life. And all of a sudden you're sitting there going, oh my God, I've got it so easy.
It makes you think.
Completely. But yeah, married, couple of kids. It's such a cool story to see somebody who's been through that and is just so damn happy to be living the life that she's living. So you've always got somebody who comes in and gives that kind of testimonial. And I mean, it is an incredibly affirming event, even just for that alone.
And she's the 2019 Michael Brennan Courage Awards recipient. That's from the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Now, Scott was a late ad. We were at lunch today.
Did talk to Coach Frost a bit.
And so. Well, he was up on stage too, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I should relay this story or not, but I guess once they realized that like Barry Alvarez wasn't going to be there, Paul Chris wasn't going to be there, Felice called Scott and said, hey, I need a solid, man. can you come up on stage? Because they literally like threw that program together last minute.
Yeah, it was just within the last couple of days. So
what did Scott have to say? Anything?
You know, I chatted with him a little bit. He, I mean, there was all the coaching changes in the news. I mean, that was
we'll
stuff.
We'll get to that in a second.
That was interesting. I chatted with him about that a bit. We can talk about that in a second. We kind of talked about that and just that was about it. So,
well, let's transfer right into that. And that is in what was a wild day, Troy Walters was out as the offensive coordinator. And then Matt Lubick, the son of Sonny Lubick, former Colorado State coach, was in as the offensive coordinator. Your thought here's the funny thing. When we signed off in December, we thought, boy, if there's going to be any change, it's going to be on the defensive side of the football.
That was the thought process.
And that didn't happen. It's come on the offensive side of the football.
So, well, and you've got Javon DeWitt, who went to North Carolina.
Yeah.
He was the outside linebackers coach. So he left, and I just completely blanked. The former D line coach went to the New York Giants. They hired him back after
1 year, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, 1 year. So he's back in town. So there was that defensive change. Although I think with Javon, that was I think if he had wanted to stay in Lincoln, he had the leeway to do that. I don't think he was asked to leave. Although I say that when you're looking at stuff from the outside looking in, it's kind of those God, Lord knows what's going on behind the scenes. And he was also the special teams coach, which Nebraska had incredibly weak special teams throughout the course of the season. I mean, it was just a disaster. And so maybe there is a lot more there than what meets the eye. It looked like that was he had an offer and it just kind of fit him and his family better to be back Mid-Atlantic, warmer weather, all of that. So he went to North Carolina. With Troy Walters, that was kind of an interesting one because that one felt more like a, hey, Troy, we'd kind of like you to move along, because it does not appear like he had a position waiting for him.
I would agree with you on that.
Yeah. I mean, to my understanding, I know it's literally 3 days later. But that almost seems like an eternity with some of these coaching changes anymore. And so I do kind of wonder if that was a, hey, we're going to part ways. We're going to try and do it as friendly as we can.
But were you surprised by it?
I don't know if I was complete, at least not so much in hindsight. When I say that, I mean it in the sense that, well, it seemed like there were some things that just weren't quite working with Frost's offense. The other thing that I heard is that while I think Troy's a fairly respected wide receivers coach, he's the offensive coordinator. But I mean, I think most people look at the situation and say, well, isn't Frost coordinating the offense and calling plays? And it's a couple of the newspaper articles mentioned as well that most of Walter's offensive coordinator duties kind of revolved more around maybe helping with game planning. That was really it.
Well,
I think of an offensive coordinator as the guy sitting there in like middle of the second quarter going, okay, you know what? Here's what we're seeing on defense. Here's what's working and here's what's not working. We're going to completely change everything we're doing. We're going to let's change how we're doing this. And we didn't practice this week, but the guys know the play. We're going to start doing that because it's going to work really well for what the defense is showing in this particular setting. You need those guys who can sit there and, well, like I said, coordinate things during the course of an actual game, be involved in the play calling during the course of the actual game. And I don't think Walters was doing that. So the other thing that really jumped out that people were commenting on is the fact that he was not known as a strong recruiter. And in this day and age, if you can't do that, it's an absolute death knell to your coaching career at the college level.
I mean, you got to sell, right? Sell.
And I remember that was one of the things that when Frank Solich made a series of coaching changes down at Nebraska would have been after the 2002 season. Yep.
So that was it was yesterday.
Yeah, so that was they kind of force retired Milt Tenneper and Dan Young from the offensive line, brought in Barney Cotton, a lot of former players.
George Arlington got the
most of that staff, but most of that staff got switched out.
Craig Bull got fired that too, or was that the year before?
No, it was Craig got fired. Yeah. That was when Pelini came in.
Yeah.
So that was Pelini's 1 year as D coordinator, 2003. So, yeah, you had this whole slew of guys that
it needed to be done, though.
Yeah.
Right? It's hard.
It is.
Former players were pissed, but Tom made Frank keep those guys.
Yeah, no, and I'm not denying that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think from a coaching standpoint, Milt Tenneper was still an outstanding coach. And he was the closest thing that Osborne and especially Solich had to a coordinator, to an offensive coordinator. The guy was a run game genius. The thing that killed him was that from a health standpoint, he had horrendous ankle arthritis, had both ankles fused, had a number of other arthritis-based oh my gosh.
You all right there?
Holy cow.
Let me buy you one.
Dude, the pistachio porter just came back kicking my ass like a, I don't know what there. Anyway, excuse me.
It's a great thing about a podcast. I'm editing that shit out.
Asshole.
I know.
Anyway, so Tenneper has these physical limitations that really kind of limited his ability to recruit. I mean, when it's one of those get on a plane and then hop in a car, and we need you to go to these 7 different high schools in, I don't know where, Arizona. It was difficult for him to do that. And I mean, if you've got any limitation, whether it's salesmanship, whether it's the ability to develop these relationships with the high school kids, develop relationships with high school coaches, physical limitations, it's going to really hamper your ability to recruit. And in this day and age, that's just killer for a college coach. But I think that was the thing that Frost is sitting there looking and going like, okay, I can go back. My buddy from Oregon's currently not coaching right now. I can pick him up. I get along with him. I think he'd be a good fit to the system. Oh, yeah. And he's known as a really solid recruiter and has some great contacts all along the West Coast.
What I was shocked about is that it's been revealed that Matt Lubick was helping out during the season. He was almost like
a consultant
Skyping in or doing a Zoom meeting like every week with Scott and Troy. So I do think coaches want to surround themselves with people they trust, they know, and that are high performers. And, you know, I think Scott knows that as a CEO, it's never hard to part ways with somebody, but if it's what's best for the pro, and we see coaches at every level do this, right? It's not personal, it's business.
It is, and it has to be that way. So in this day and age, I think it does.
When you were playing, did you have any assistant turnover? Did Kevin Steele come and go during your time?
He arrived the year before I hit the door, and my senior year was his last year before leaving to go Carolina Panthers. So, yeah, in the time I was there, we had no assistants come or go.
And that's hard anymore, right? I mean, to keep continuity like that is difficult.
Yeah, it really is. I think there's, again, at that period of time, I hate to say that, I think things are a lot more similar than they were different. I mean, a lot of people are, it's a different time and things, God, you got the transfer portal now and this and that. God, man, we had players transferring. When you start looking back on it, you start counting up, okay, who stayed, who transferred, all of that, all of a sudden you realize, we had a lot of this turnover then too. And so, the big anomaly for us was the status quo within the coaching staff. The fact that these guys had a lot of them had been there for years and years, and a lot of them stayed for well after that.
So, you know, you got the turnover in coaches. You've had some walk-ons leave who are going to, and that doesn't surprise me. Right? Well, you and I have talked about that. We've seen some guys that came in as preferred walk-ons say, you know what, I'm going to go play somewhere else.
Yeah, well, and you saw some stuff too, like John Raridan. Scott was his dad, but John Raridan, who is one of the offensive linemen mm-hmm. on the team, basically retiring. He's going to focus on an architecture career.
Yeah. What is it? Well, can you retire? Don't you just quit?
Suppose you can, yeah, however you want. Well, when you turn 65, are you just going to quit?
No, I'm going to retire because I got paid to do something for that long. If you're not getting paid.
Well, he was on scholarship.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he was, I think, a 4-star recruit.
Is that actually just a nice way of saying I quit? I'm just going to go do something else?
It might be. I mean, you got a kid who was, I mean, if you think about it this way, you got a kid who was a four-star recruit. It just never seemed like he found his place on that offensive line.
And that happens, right? You just never know. And it does.
I mean, there are guys who I think maybe they peak at a little bit of an early age. Maybe it's a case of you come in under one coach and a different coach comes in, and maybe you just ever so slightly don't really fit the model of what they're looking for. And if that's the case, I mean, man, that's it, it's tough, but that's kind of the nature of the game if you have a coaching change. But there's so many guys that come in and just don't, I hate to say don't pan out, but just because a guy was a 3-4 or even a 5-star recruit doesn't mean they're going to hit college ball and shine.
Well, hell, look at Pernell Jefferson. Here's a guy that was committed to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Now he's left the team and he never played a snap.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and a guy like, I think one of the things, there's a few things that haunts guys. I mean, one, I think there's some guys who truly do. They kind of peak early, they get to college, and no matter what, they just don't develop anymore. They've kind of hit that, they've kind of maxed out that talent they had, and it was great for a high school senior, but it was very okay once you get to the college level. I think one of the other things that happens, and I actually saw this probably more frequently than you would think, and that's where a guy comes in and they kind of believe those press clippings a little bit. And it takes some of these guys a couple of years to understand that, hey, just because I was a 4-star recruit, 5-star recruit, whatever, it doesn't mean you get to show up and you're going to be a star. There's a lot of development. There's a massive amount of work that has to go into being a very good college football player. And for a lot of these guys, they hit the door. And if they're not the man, if they're not Wandale Robinson carrying the load day one, it can get incredibly discouraging for a lot of these kids who've been used to all of these accolades all through high school, everybody telling them how great they are, because they are. And then they get to the next level and, well, you know what? If you want to be great at this level, you kind of got to go back to square one and start working at it. And they just don't have that ability to see that, flip that switch, get their butt into the weight room, work hard in practice, and understand there's a little bit of a developmental curve going to that next level for 99% of guys.
How many, and this is, you know, maybe switching track a little bit, but if you were a betting man, just a betting man, how many true freshmen start in 2020?
For Nebraska?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Two, three, four?
Two to three, maybe. I don't think it's going to be a lot.
I think that's a pretty high number, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we're talking true freshmen. Hold on, because I actually, before the show, I pulled up the... So, I mean, in terms of true freshmen...
I think it'd be... I think from true freshmen to redshirt freshmen, quite a few.
I could see more on the redshirt freshmen. Yeah. Ronald Delancey's an interesting kid. He's a cornerback out of Miami, but he's a kid that I think would be kind of interesting. Blazing freaking speed. defensive end spot, Feldarius Payne. Now, he's a community college transfer. So, I mean, I'm thinking first-year players. He wouldn't be a freshman, though. Nico Cooper's another guy. I mean, he's another big, kind of one of those outside linebacker defensive end types, but more of a rush defensive end that I think could, but again, from a community college standpoint, he's another guy that I think could get some time. From the lineman standpoint, you've got Alex Kahn. I think he just needs development. That's a guy that's going to need a little bit of, he's going to need a little bit of time. Marvin Scott at running back's a guy that people have said might be playing into the mix early on. Not the smallest guy. He's 5'9", 203, which isn't huge, but it's a hell of a lot bigger than, say, putting Wandale Robinson at running back. So, again, going back to the JUCO guys, again, like I said, I get it. Not a true freshman, but it's a first-year player within the program. That Ativa Maga Clements, the linebacker. And again, he's not a huge linebacker, but apparently he's kind of one of these Terrell Farley types, which when I say that, I think every Nebraska fan from the 90s listening, the hair on the back of their neck just pricked.
You remember Petey Mack, who we worked with at Channel 3?
No, I don't know Petey Mack at all.
He loved Terrell Farley, man. We would have
The guy was insane. He was one of those guys. So Farley was one of these guys that it wasn't like he had 17 tackles a game. He'd have three tackles, but two would be sacks. One would be a big tackle for loss behind the line of scrimmage. That was redundant. But he'd have three total tackles. But like I said, it'd be two sacks and one big tackle for loss. Two fumble recoveries, a fumble caused, and a blocked kick. That was like his stat line for every single game. He just...
Speed.
He did. He didn't have these... It wasn't like he was the 17 tackles a game tackle producer, but he would make literally like five game-changing plays every freaking game. I'm interested to see Nash Hutmacher, who, if you're a local person, huge kid out of Chamberlain, South Dakota. I mean, the guy's 6'5", 6'6", 285, 290. I think he's like the second or third ranked heavyweight wrestler in the nation.
Really?
Yes. Beast in the weight room. He and his dad post weightlifting pics, and it's stuff that would put like NFL guys to shame.
Wow.
Now, I've watched some of his huddle film on football, and I'll be interested to see how he does. I mean, I'm just telling you what I've seen at this point. His wrestling tapes and his weightlifting tapes are more impressive than his football tapes.
So Mark Manning might want him on the wrestling team.
He might. He might. The guy can play. Here's a guy that I think could play as a true freshman is Blaze Gunnarsson. So...
Iowa kid.
Carroll, Iowa, baby.
There's a nice article in the Omaha World Herald. I find it interesting that the Huskers are spent a little time over in Iowa now. They've got like four or five guys that are on the radar.
They had, I think, three in town this weekend. So
now, why do you got to go take those Iowa guys? Why do you got to steal?
You guys have been doing it for years. So
it's interesting because, I mean, let's be honest. Nebraska has gotten its fair share of good Iowa players. Iowa's gotten its fair share of pretty good Nebraska players over the course of time. So it is, it is kind of an even swap, maybe. And who knows? Maybe a Zadisku will be in a Hawkeye uniform. Who knows?
He's looking. Hey, he said if he gets a scholarship offer elsewhere and a walk-on offer at Nebraska, he's going to pack his bag. So, Omar Manning, another kid out of that recruiting class. He's Kilgore Junior College in Kilgore, Texas, but 6'4", 220-pound wide receiver. He was in with a group of guys that they signed pretty specifically with the idea that, hey, there's some of these guys we need to get in who are going to have to play right away, and Omar Manning's one of them. And that wide receiver spot is – huge for what they're going to need. One of the guys I'm really interested to see how he does. Another outside linebacker, Keyshawn Green, Crawfordville, Florida. That is, and this kid was a flip from Florida State, I believe.
Really?
Yeah, decommitted from Florida State. Nebraska snapped him up. The other guy that I think is going to be interesting is Turner Corcoran, Lawrence Free State kid. He's a Lawrence, Kansas kid. But huge, huge frame, 6'6", 6'7", 280-pound guy. I think he could seriously stand to live about a year and a half in the weight room before he gets on the field. He and Khan are kind of out of the same mold as far as offensive linemen goes. They're almost tall, lanky guys. They look like power forwards on a basketball team is what they look like. They don't look like offensive linemen.
Well, here's what I know. After watching the national championship game between LSU and Clemson, there's a lot of teams in this country that have a long way to go to compete at that level, because that was sick, man. The speed on that field that night was amazing.
It was. And now I'll be curious to see how LSU does next year, because they're losing a lot of guys.
Guys and coaches, right? Yeah. I mean,
and there's, it can always be a little deceptive, because I remember watching, it was the year Nebraska played Georgia in the Gator Bowl and beat them, upset them. They had the...
was it the Gator Bowl?
Yeah, I can't remember. Tommy Armstrong had that long pass to, I think it was Quincy Enunwa, for the big touchdown in the second half that kind of sealed it. But that was a game, if you recall, that was the same season, though, that Alabama, I remember, I think it was, that was the year Nebraska got just gutted by Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game, the Melvin Gordon still running.
Yeah, 24-19. It was the Gator Bowl. It was 2014.
Okay, yeah. So Gator Bowl. But that was the year Alabama and Georgia played in the SEC title game. And if you watch that SEC title game, all I could remember was, oh my God. See, whoever gets the ball last is going to win this game, because both teams were just really, really big and mind-blowingly fast. And it was just an absolute slugfest. And then after the game ended, and they did the, was it a day or so later, they did the bowl selection show. And everybody was talking about, oh my gosh, Georgia got completely like screwed here, because they lost the SEC title game, almost won it. And if Georgia had won it, they would have gone to play for the national title. And instead, they get relegated to playing lowly Nebraska in the Gator Bowl. And Nebraska beat them. And I thought that was a game where, man, there is no way that Nebraska is going to be able to hang in there against Georgia. We are going to get just destroyed. So it's kind of hard to look at some of those games and be able to carry it over.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. You know, a lot of people brought up Joe Burrow. It's like, oh my God, if he would have gone to Nebraska, this would have happened. No, I don't think that would have happened.
He wouldn't have had the O-line he had at LSU. He had none of the wide receivers he had at LSU. Definitely didn't have the defense he had at LSU.
I mean, remember, Joe Burrow wasn't even that great last year for LSU. He was good. He wasn't great.
Yeah, he was solid, but not great. You know, and here's the thing that everybody rips on. I get there was the whole, well, Pelini didn't, or not so much Pelini, but like Tim Beck didn't want him. And so Pelini didn't recruit him that hard for that reason. And then Riley gets hired, and I guess Riley made a little bit of a push for him, but by then he'd committed to Ohio State. So then a lot of blame got put on Frost, because there was a lot of talk, even coming from Joe Burrow, that Joe was saying, yeah, I would have gone to Nebraska if they would have had me. But look at it from Frost's perspective. You got a kid at Ohio State, Joe Burrow, who's transferring because he wasn't able to beat out the kid who couldn't start at Georgia and transferred to Ohio State. So, I mean, he wasn't able to crack the starting lineup at Ohio State. He got beat out at Ohio State by another transfer who couldn't beat out the starter at Georgia. It's, I mean, that's not exactly an impressive transfer resume. I mean, if you were like Jalen Hurts, oh yeah, I totally get it. You have a chance to get him, go for it. Here's a guy who's played in two or three college football playoffs, has bailed his team out of one potential loss during that one semifinal. He was like the hero. Played in a couple national title games. I mean, his entire college postseason was essentially the college football playoffs. That's all he did for his college,
yeah,
his college postseason career. Yeah, Jalen Hurts comes along. That's a transfer resume you go after. Yeah, Joe Burrow, you got a guy who rode pine at Ohio State for a couple of years, made a decision to transfer because he got beat out by yet another transfer who's 2 years younger than him. That is not an impressive transfer resume. Oh, and by the way, you got Adrian Martinez coming in who, don't forget, I mean, Martinez's true freshman year was a pretty impressive freaking year. So it's, I mean, at that point, everybody's looking and going like, that year, people were saying, because it's not like we didn't know about Joe Burrow that year. People knew about him. People knew who Joe Burrow was. I knew a lot of people who were still following him to see how he did down at LSU. And there was all these same people who were bitching and moaning that we didn't get Joe Burrow were the same people the year before going, thank God we got Adrian Martinez instead of Joe Burrow.
So Paul Feinbaum, and I know a lot of people don't like Paul Feinbaum. He doesn't bother me one way or another. Really, nobody really bothers me. Said that this LSU team was the best in college football history. Better than 95 Nebraska, better than 2001 Miami.
Come on, it's all relative.
It is. It's hyperbole, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just...
They had a great season. I mean, it's hard to go by purely just statistics. And I think it's also hard to go by ratings. We go round and round all the time, hell in my own family, about 94 versus 95 Nebraska, for instance.
They were your backups.
One, I'll give you that. The other thing that I would give you as well, too, is that when you look at the rankings, 95 Nebraska played a very nicely well-ranked schedule. I would say we had a harder schedule in 94. Colorado was by far and away a better team in 94 than they were in 95. Kansas State was by far and away a better team in 94 than they were in 95. Oklahoma was a tremendously better team in 93 and 94 than they were in 95. Kansas was a much better team. We played a very good NFL-loaded UCLA team in Lincoln in 94. We played a ranked Texas Tech team at Tech.
That was a Thursday night game, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, I remember that. I was there.
That's a team, again, that had a good handful of NFL guys on it. And then we played, again, a bowl game, a bowl-bound West Virginia team in the kickoff classic. Now, if you looked at all of those teams' actual, what was their AP rank, I think 95 matches up just as good or better than 94. But those individual opponents in 94, despite their ranking, were better than they were in 95. And it's just, they just were. Because one team's ranked, like the fourth-ranked team in the country one season doesn't mean they're just as good as the fourth-ranked team in another season.
That makes sense. I agree with you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what
you mean. That's the reason we rank, like, who are the best number ones of all time? I mean, I think most people agree, 71 Nebraska. Probably a lot better team than 1970 Nebraska. I mean, there's a lot of people that say 94, 95 Nebraska are better than 97 Nebraska.
I believe that.
Yeah. I mean,
do you believe that? I do.
Yeah. I mean, I'm saying that there's number one, like just because a team's number one, it's, if you go by the fact that you're,
do you know what team was really, what I think I could make the argument 99 Nebraska was better than 97 Nebraska. And if Carell Buckhalter doesn't fumble the ball 8 million times in Texas in 99.
Yeah. Nebraska wins a national title absolutely. That year. Yeah. That was a good team in 99. Oof. That was a very good team. But we rank all these, and then all of a sudden, the fact that we're willing to rank them and admit that a number one from one season is better or worse than a number one from another season, but then we turn around and we completely toss that logic out the window when we say, well, look at the ranked schedule, the 98 such and such team played versus the 96 such and such team. They played a much tougher schedule. Okay, well, that flies in the face of the logic that we're even ranking number ones differently. It's, yeah, just because your schedule is ranked somewhere in a given year doesn't mean it is, in fact, actually a tougher schedule. So.
Hey, the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl, first time since 1970. The 49ers going back to the Super Bowl, trying to win their sixth overall title. And for the first time since 1993, a Nebraska player not playing in the Super Bowl. That ends... Wow, that's a long-ass streak, man.
It is. What, although 26 years? That's one of those things I've always thought of as sort of a kind of statistical anomaly streak.
It's a luck streak, right?
It's been pure luck that we've had a guy. That's. I think a lot of people like to think of that in the sense of, well, we've got so many guys in the NFL. That's why it's happening. It's like, nah, that's just dumb luck that we've had a guy in the Super Bowl that many years in a row. So
yeah, but it went up to the AFC title game. But once Tennessee got knocked out,
but even then, it was just what, Josh Kalu?
Yeah,
I mean that was it though.
Yep. Who do you like in the Super Bowl, dude? Mahomes is so awesome.
He is right now, though. The way I think the 49ers are playing nearly just as good. Overall quality of football.
They got this really good tight end. I don't know if you ever heard of him, George Kittle.
Yeah, Iowa kid. Their fullback,
he's a beast. Have you ever watched him?
Oh, he is. The guy's a baller. Their fullback's good too. That's part of the reason I like the 49ers is they utilize a fullback on almost every play. But if you've watched the 49ers play during the playoffs, they're the one team that might have actually rushed the ball collectively as a team better than the Tennessee Titans and didn't get credit for it.
Dude, Mostert went for 220 yesterday.
Yeah.
I think that never happens in the NFL.
No, and I think they had 288 yards total rushing, and Jimmy Garoppolo threw 8 passes. Now, here's the thing.
6 of 8.
He's actually a pretty good quarterback. I think people still think of him as Tom Brady's backup who got lucky. Garoppolo's pretty damn good. He didn't throw the ball 8 times because they were sitting there going like, yeah, we just want him to be a game manager. He can go out and win the game with his arm if he needs to. It's just when you were rushing the ball and crushing guys up front like San Francisco was, you don't have to throw.
Well, I was going to say, Kansas City needs to throw the football. They need Mahomes to do it. If you can win a game without throwing the football, if you can run, if you can have a guy that goes for 220, you'll win that game most of the time.
And the 49ers have a good defense. Chiefs do as well, too. That was the big upgrade this year. The Chiefs' defense played markedly better than they did last year, and that's what got that. That was the difference for them this year. I look at the 49ers, and that's one of the more complete teams I've seen. They can pass, they can run like nobody's business, and they've got great defense. And when that combination of defense and the ability to damn near run the ball at will. Geez, that's hard to overcome. That's a hell of a combination.
God, you know what I forgot to do today, and I wish I would have. I'd never thought of it.
Put bets on the Super Bowl?
No, we were sitting there talking to Dave, and I wanted to get his opinion about Roger Craig not making the Pro Football Hall of Fame, because I think that is a travesty of justice.
To this
day,
I mean, even if you took me outside the realm of being a Nebraska fan, That one still always blows my mind.
Think about this. He was the first 1,000 guy. Rush for 1,000. It's only been done twice since in the National Football League. Tell me why he's not in the Hall of Fame. A Super Bowl champion, a Pro Bowler, All Pro.
There's a handful of guys, and I think a lot of them have gone on to be elected to the Hall of Fame. I call it the Troy Aikman paradox. It's one of those. Well, should Troy Aikman really be in the Hall of Fame? Because, man, he had all those great players around him. And I think Roger Craig gets hit with that. He's like, God, he had a great quarterback. Quarterbacks.
Yeah, Steve Young and Joe Montana.
Yeah, great, great offensive line. I mean, you had like Cipolla and those guys on the offensive line.
Great
there
defense
the
around him.
Incredible defense, great wide receivers,
tight ends.
So
is he guilty of being not the biggest name in a lot of stars?
Yeah, I think that's it. But I mean, if you look at the numbers are there.
Yes.
The other thing is that I really look at is the contribution to winning. Roger Craig contributed to the 49ers being those great teams late 80s, early 90s. I mean, he was a huge contributor to that.
Just a shame. I was shocked. I mean, I mean, growing up in Iowa,
he made it as a finalist.
He's a Davenport kid, and him and his brother both go to Nebraska.
Yeah, he made it to what, finalist?
I think this is the last year. I don't know if he can get in anymore.
I thought they had some kind of...
Well, this was the Veterans Committee or whatever they call it. Yeah. So I don't know
I think those guys can continue to vote a man, but...
God, I don't know what more a guy has to. But I wanted to talk to Dave about that because... I also want to know what Dave thought. Because, you know, ESPN did its, like, greatest players at every position.
Yeah.
And he was, like, a second teamer.
Yeah, I commented on that on Twitter. I was like,
"Was it Bednarik was number? Who was it?" Or
yeah, it was Chuck Bednarik.
Yeah, who's a better defensive player than he was an offensive player.
Yeah, who is in the Hall of Fame, but nobody's sitting there going. And like I said, he was a hell of an old lineman. Don't get me wrong, but it's not like you're looking at Chuck going, "Oh my God, that guy's in the Hall of Fame for his offensive line skills." He's in there because he nearly killed Frank Gifford.
You're probably right. Probably exactly right.
Yeah, it was his defensive play that got him elected. And he was an all-pro as an offensive lineman, but I just, there's some things I don't get, and that was one of them. There were some other ones on that list, too. I mean, I'm just talking Nebraska guys, but Rich Glover.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've watched tape of Rich Glover. If you thought Sue dominated, you should go find some old tape of Rich Glover. Rich Glover he destroyed guys. And this was in an era where offensive linemen were starting to get big. I mean, and Rich Glover played at like 240. And he was playing against 260, 270-pound offensive linemen and just killing guys. Bob Brown's another one. I'm a huge Bob Brown fan. College Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he's not even on that damn list. And he's I would say easily. See, anytime I do the like my all-time Nebraska offensive line. I got Steinkuhler, Will Shields, Dave, Zach Wiegert, and Bob Brown. That's my top five starting offensive line for Nebraska football history. It's hard to put Bob ahead of Dave, but amongst those five, I rank Bob one or two on that. See, out of those five guys.
You just gave me an idea because we're going to try to get together and podcast once a month and tell, you know, we'll start going. There was a bug on my shoulder. I had to flick it off. We'll start going, you know, weekly once the season gets underway in August. But maybe we should do that once a month, like pick a position group and give your top five.
Doing all-time Nebraska.
Yeah, your all-time defensive line, your all-time running backs, your all-time defensive. I mean, that may not be a bad idea. We just got ourselves some filler from month to month. See, I'm an idea guy.
I'm gonna have to piss Dave off when we do quarterbacks.
You think so? Yeah, you're not gonna go with Turner Gill.
You're gonna start. I like Turner.
Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah.
Didn't win any championship.
Oh, one big A
championship.
Look at you dropping the didn't win any championships.
I just, you know, for me, that's the one position where, like, I will grant credit to a quarterback for winning. Because it's one of the few positions where you can single-handedly affect the outcome of a game. Anybody can at any position. Yeah. But that's the one where literally on every play, that ball's is literally in your hands. And I'm not saying he's not an all-time great. If you're like, name your all-time great quarterbacks, I mean, it's Behringer, Frazier, Frost.
I'm just going to shut up.
Yeah, I mean, it's those guys. You got Turner Gill. You got Steve Taylor. I mean, you got Taggy's on there. You got to have Taggy in my book.
I may even challenge even more.
Yeah, Taggy.
I may say, hey, next one, you got to come up with your starting offense, all-time starting offense. You just did the offensive line, but I may make you think, yeah, hey, Rob, in February, all-time starting offense.
God, the QB one's tough.
All-time starting defense. And then we can start having some fun after that. So you just start thinking about that. Hey, before we go, just to let you know, Derek King, the former Houston quarterback, who, of course, decided after four games to take a red shirt because they were losing, and said, no, I'm going to stay at Houston. He ends up at Miami. Does that surprise you a little bit?
Not at all.
And then Felipe Franks, who was at Florida, ends up at Arkansas. That one kind of surprised me a little bit. Why Arkansas?
Who's a coach at Arkansas now?
It's
literally like, who knows?
Guy from Georgia. It was an assistant at Georgia.
Okay.
How about Lane Kiffin going to Ole Miss? Did we talk about that?
We did not.
And then Mike Leach to Mississippi State.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun, though, isn't it?
I'm going to predict that I think you're going to see longer, stabler results at Mississippi State than you do Ole Miss. I'm not a big believer in Kiffin.
Well, it's hard, right? I mean, he wasn't at Tennessee long enough to know. He
really wasn't at USC.
And that wasn't his fault. Pete Carroll left him with a shitstorm of sanctions.
Yeah, I'll give you that, but he did dealt with
He did win
horribly.
At Florida Atlantic, but that's Florida Atlantic.
Yeah.
Lord knows this. I mean, because he went after a Nebraska coach, right? The guy got a huge raise. He'll make it fun. He'll make it interesting.
He does. There's a lot of Lane's all about Lane, and I think players sense that. I mean, and when that's your coach, it's hard to deal with. I think Leach is one of those guys. I mean, he's freaking hilarious. He's always, I mean, his quotes, his speeches, his pressers are amazing.
Do you follow him on Twitter?
Oh, my God.
He just taught a history class last week.
Yeah. It's,
I thought that was fun. I'm like, dude, you taught a history class.
Yeah, the guy's a genius. I don't think he does it to draw attention to himself. That's just him.
Yeah, I think he enjoys it.
Those are the thoughts actually going. Like, that guy actually just has those wild thoughts going through his head.
Oh, man. It's 2020 is going to be a lot of fun. This is our first podcast of 2020. We're going to try to do one each and every month leading up to the month of August, when we'll kick in each and every week. If you don't follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, please follow him on Twitter at DocTalkSports. You've been on Twitter very much since the...
Oh, yeah.
All right. He's on there. If you have questions for us anytime, you can always send them DocTalkSports@gmail.com. DocTalkSports@gmail.com. I'm dead serious. If you want us to Facebook Live or YouTube this podcast, let me know, because there's some equipment I can get. I think I could figure it out. We could We could do it.
The Facebook Live, I don't know if I would do that. Maybe, the only reason I even remotely agreed with Dave on the YouTube side of it.
Because there's money to be made.
Yeah, there's money to be made. And you know what?
You hope anyway.
You and I, we're all about the greenbacks.
It's all about the money, Rob. Don't you know that? We don't get together just because we like each other. We don't get together just because it's fun to talk football.
Drink beer
and talk about our families. No, we're all about the money. That's what we're about.
That's it.
Oh, man. So thank you so much. But give us some feedback on the YouTube if that's something you'd be interested in. Big thanks to the Remington Trophy. Great celebration in Lincoln last week. Dave, we're sorry you didn't come on. We know why you didn't want to. That's fine. Maybe next year we can get you on. Big thanks to Infusion Brewing Company. Rob drank two pistachio porters tonight.
They went down smooth.
We are going to be live at the Infusion Brewing Company in Benson on March 8th. It's a Sunday for the Chili Cook-Off.
Eating chili.
That's right. Make sure to go to Ticket Express at TicketExpress.com when you need event tickets. I'm going to use them to get some KU basketball tickets for me as I go see my son. And then Scotty at Husker Hounds, such a cool dude. And because he's got everything you need if you're looking for something Husker. He was in Vegas last week. He was shopping for all sorts of new stuff. So he's got all sorts of new stuff. And then Husker Max. Husker Max, kind enough to distribute this podcast on a regular basis. Rob, thanks for coming in tonight. Appreciate it, buddy.
Absolutely. Stay warm.
Tell Jen hi for me. Yeah, no kidding. It's colder than all get up. All right, we'll talk to you next month. Yes, next month. On another edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.